You are listening to Law and Gospel on this Wednesday, April the 27th, in the year of our Lord 2016. And I'm Tom Baker, all by myself today. Yesterday, I was with Mark Smith on the hymn. Tomorrow, with Wes Reimnitz. And we're going to be continuing our conversation that I'm beginning today. What am I going to be talking about? Well, if you heard the promo, some years ago I had attended a Mormon temple before it was dedicated. Kind of went through it and then had some discussion about it on KFUO. Well, last Tuesday I was in a Bible study at Emmanuel Lutheran Olivet, and one of the women mentioned that the Muslims were opening up a new mosque and they were going to have an open house. She was intending to go, and she asked me, did I want to go? And I said, oh, I don't think so. And then she said, well, they're giving out free food. I said, oh, well, I'll probably go then. What happened, I preached in Rosebud out there in Missouri, and the mosque open house was from, I think, 11 till 4. So I got there about 1 in the afternoon. And I want to share with you what I experienced, and then talk to you a little bit about the great confusion that many people have in regard to the Muslim faith. First of all, when I entered into the building, the imam welcomed me. Now, by the way, I had my collar on, a clergy collar, and he asked, you know, who I was. I told him I'm with the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. And I signed my name and gave my email address. And then he showed me this big room where they kneel 5 times a day for prayer. And he said, you're welcome to enter into it. You know, you just have to take off your shoes. And I didn't want to do that. So I said, well, I'll just take a kind of tour of the rest of the building. Well, off to the side, past that room, there was another little room, and it was quite fascinating to see what they had there. They had a whole row of how Muslims have been very important in certain areas of the world. For example, and I was kind of unaware of some of these things, so I did learn, Muslims invented the toothbrush. They talked quite a bit about their work with coffee and also surgery. They were good doctors. And so I went around that booth for a bit, and they told me that they were going to have a PowerPoint presentation. Now, the imam didn't do it, but another Muslim individual, probably I would consider him like an elder or something, he got up on the stage. There were around 100 people there. About 40 of them were Muslims. The rest were others, like myself, and we sat in chairs and watched this PowerPoint presentation. In fact, while I'm sitting there, there were people who came up to me and said, you know, what church are you affiliated with? And I explained it. The one thing I regretted, I didn't bring enough business cards to hand them out and talk about my radio program, but I had some conversation with folks who were around me. Well, the PowerPoint presentation began. The first point they made was, when we think of the word Muslim or the Islamic faith, you would think that these are basically Arabs. But the very first point they made in the PowerPoint presentation, that only 15% of Muslims are Arabs. There are 1.7 billion Muslims, which means one out of every five people on earth is a Muslim, and 82% of them, he said, were non-Arab. In America, there are 3.3 million, which means 0.2%. However, right now in the United States, they have 3,000 mosques and 200 schools. I believe this location, and it's about 2 miles from my house where I live. And it used to belong to another religious group. We were trying to remember what it was. We thought it might be Jehovah's Witness, but maybe not. And the Muslims bought it, really did a wonderful job in refashioning the building. Looks very beautiful. A wonderful parking lot, freshly paved. And so they were welcoming people from the neighborhood to learn more about the Muslim faith. The first Muslims, actually, according to this individual, came to the United States in 1875. They have 11,000 Muslims in the military. They also, at the White House, every Ramadan, that's one of their big festivals, of course, they are invited to the White House, and there's some kind of ceremony there. They were making the point that Muslims are in Congress, they are mayors, they're representatives in all over the place. In fact, one of the things they did, and I didn't know this, a Muslim designed the Sears Tower. And then they talked about contribution to civilization. Now, I find that kind of interesting because a few weeks ago, I spoke about an article that was in our St. Louis Post-Dispatch, that's our newspaper, on ignorance about Islam fuels hatred and misconception. And it was written by a Muslim attorney in New York. And what I found interesting, he was talking about the ignorance about Islam is not just by people who aren't Muslims, but even by many Muslims. And he talked about how some of the groups, the Wahhabis, the Salafists, and the Maududis, they really don't understand the Quran properly. These are these extremists, right-wing or left-wing, whichever way you want to say it, Muslims, who, you know, kill people, this sort of thing. I'll get a little bit more into that in a few minutes. But I often think if I had the opportunity to talk about what Lutheranism was about, I doubt I would start by talking about how many Lutherans there are in the world, even though it's the biggest Protestant denomination in the world. The biggest denomination, of course, is Roman Catholic. And that's followed by the Protestants, and Lutheranism is number one. Now, there's a lot of lands where there are Lutheran churches, but not that many people attend. So you got to be a little careful with all these stats. At any rate, I also went and talked about how Lutherans are in Congress and what they invented, because there's some really interesting facts about that, but I don't think I'd start off that way. So it was clear to me that they were really trying to put a good face on the Islamic faith. I have to say, they were very friendly. I really enjoyed talking to them, and I had some questions I was all set to give after the PowerPoint presentation. And when they opened up for questions, they took one, and then there was an announcement that the second hour of prayer, you know, they pray five times, and the second hour was now ready, and so they had to leave, and then they said they would come back and answer any more questions. But that's kind of a long time. I, again, didn't go inside that room where they prayed because I wasn't going to take off my shoes. And therefore, I kind of watched from the open door. They did allow the visitors to come in, but they had chairs in the back of the room for them to sit. Now, they finally got to what they believed. And I just was somewhat interested to hear what he had to say. Well, what he said is that if you believe in God, any God, then that really is Allah. In other words, they believe in one God, Allah. They believe in angels. They have holy books. And included in the holy books were the Quran and the Bible. I learned a number of things I did not know. For example, he says the messengers like Muhammad, Jesus, Abraham, Moses, Isaac, Isaiah. They're not divine. And then he says something I never heard before. But they never committed a sin. They were sinless. That was going to be one of my questions. How David and Bathsheba is not regarded as a sinful act is beyond me, but that's what he said. He said that the exact words from the Quran came about over 1,500 years. They do not believe Jesus is divine, but he was without a father like Adam was. And then he got to the point that I knew was coming, and that is they believe in what's referred to as free will. Now, we Christians believe in free will in the sense that in the area of temporal matters, you can choose what car to buy, what food to buy, what house to buy, who to marry, what church to attend. But they mean free will, unfortunately, like some other Christians mean it, that you can make a free choice as to whether or not to believe in God and follow his commands. And here's what he said about free will. If you choose the right path of obedience, you go to paradise. But if you choose the wrong path, you go to hell. Now, there was no assurance like we have in Christianity that sins are forgiven. See, this is something I've been talking about quite a bit because of a recent interview I heard about an individual who visits with Mormons. And it really struck me, and I've been using this for about a month now. The interesting thing we have in Christianity is that God becomes our substitute. He's the one who takes upon himself our sins. Wow. That's not found in any other religion in the world. Every other religion, therefore, believes in a kind of a free will where you make the choice, you follow the right path, you get rewarded, you follow the wrong path, you go to hell. Boy, how would you like to have parents like that? If you disobey them, you don't get any supper. You're not allowed to sleep in your bed. And if you obey them, well, then you get clothing and supper and food and a bed, this kind of thing. I can't understand how people think the true God is like that. Well, at any rate, going on, they talked about the five pillars of the Islamic faith. I'm not very good at pronouncing Arabic, but the first one is Shahada. There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger. They had four others, and one of them was Sarm. They believe in fasting at Ramadan from dawn to sunset, and here were the reasons. It will build up your willpower. It will cleanse your soul. It will boost your motivation. And it will also help you become immune to disease. Zakat is the giving of alms. And one of the most important is Hajj, which is the pilgrimage to Mecca. And They believe that you're to go there because this is what he said. That's where Abraham was with not Isaac, but with Ishmael. See, this is very important to understand that the Christians and the Jews follow Abraham through Isaac. And the Apostle Paul in Romans 9 makes it very clear that not everyone who is of Israel is of Israel. But from God's point of view, the only people who are true Israelites, that is, members of the church, are those who follow Isaac in the promises, believing the promises of the coming Messiah through Isaac. He said there were two holidays, two Muslim holidays. One was Ramadan, and the other, of course, and I didn't know this, was a celebration in remembrance of Abraham, who was going to kill Isaac, but did not. And on that celebration, by the way, Muslims all over the world are to slaughter an animal to remember what happened with Abraham. He talked about kinds of books that they follow, and I've already mentioned that. And then he had a set of decrees. One of the first questions was, why don't you use drink? You see, they're not allowed not only to eat pork, but they're not allowed also to drink any alcoholic beverages. And he said, no, that wasn't something we made up. That is strict orders from Allah. So, what I saw again and again was a very positive understanding of the Islamic faith. People very friendly. There were little children walking around. Some women also had their face totally covered. Others did not, but they still had the Muslim dress. So I wanted to look into this a little bit more because one of my questions was, are there different denominations within the Islamic faith? Because some obviously are more fierce in their violence and others are not. You'll recall some time ago, I had received a sheet from a good friend of mine who had gone through the Quran. And these are actually chapters and verse of what the Quran had to say. For example, strike off the heads of infidels and strike off every fingertip. That's Surah 8, number 10. And things like this. Take none of the infidels as friends. In fact, don't have infidels for friends. If you do, you have no hope from Allah. There was really quite a number of statements here. And by the way, if anybody wants a copy of it, I'm only too happy to send it out to you. Just email me and ask for a copy of these, and I'll send them to you. But Surah, for example, 60, take not my foe and your foe for friends. Another surah, Muhammad is the apostle of God and his comrades are vehement against the infidels. Now, this was also found in that article I read from the Post-Dispatch a few weeks ago, where they make a distinction between moderate Muslims and the ideologies of Wahhabis, Salafists, and Maududis. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about them tomorrow, but let me just give you a kind of a summary. Wahhabism is a branch of Sunni Islam. And therefore, I assume that this mosque was Sunni because they refer to their leader as an imam. That's kind of like a pastor. And that's the word used by Sunni Muslims. The Wahhabism is extremely ultra-conservative, fundamentalist, puritanical, and it is a reform movement to restore pure monotheistic worship by scholars and advocates. And it's regarded as extremist by its opponents. It's named after an 18th century preacher and scholar, Muhammad ibn Abd al-Wahhab. He started a revivalist movement, and therefore this was one of the more dangerous views of the Muslim faith. In fact, the Islamic State, the preferred Arabic name is Daesh, D-A-E-S-H. And this is the movement that a lot of these folks who are more moderate oppose. Another one is Salafism. Salafis are fundamentalists who believe in return to the original ways of Islam. You know, in Christianity, we have groups like that. For example, the Seventh-day Adventists believe that we really need to return to the Bible and worship only on Saturday, because they don't make the law and gospel distinction that the Sabbath has both moral, ceremonial, and civil laws, and worshiping on just the seventh day is part of the ceremonial law that we no longer need to follow. In fact, the Apostle Paul even says, don't be arguing about moons and Sabbaths and this kind of thing, because all of that has been abrogated by Jesus Christ. What we follow from the Old Testament are the morality laws of the Ten Commandments. But these radical groups within the Muslim faith, the Salafis, they want to return to the original ways of Islam. By the way, we'll talk more about this tomorrow, how involved the Saudis are with that particular movement. Salafism offers a pure form of Islam, stripped of cultural and national associations, and it is especially popular with new converts. For example, in Egypt, 5 to 6 million of the 82 million population are believed to be Salafis. Now, the last one that was mentioned in this article, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this right, Maududi, M-A-U-D-U-D-I-S. This was also begun by an individual who lived from 1903 to 1979, an Indian-Pakistani scholar. And he was the founder, which has become one of the largest Islamic organizations in Asia. They really believe in Sharia law. He began Sharia law not just as a command that helped define what it meant to be a Muslim, but something without which a Muslim society could not be Islamic. So you've heard about this Sharia law. Let me just read one thing about women. Maududi preached that the duty of women is to manage the household, bring up children, and provide them and her husband with the greatest possible comfort and contentment. He supported the complete veiling and segregation of women. And that was practiced in most of Muslim India at that time. He said women should remain in their homes except when absolutely necessary, and that the face of the women should also be covered whenever they left their homes. Concerning the separation of the genders, he preached that men should avoid looking at women other than their wives, mothers, and sisters. Remember, not long ago, a father killed his daughter because men were looking at her and she wanted to go out on dates with them. They also oppose women to be a head of state or a legislator, since according to Islam, active politics and ministration are not the field of activity of women. So you're seeing a lot of this in Sharia law, and that's why it all depends how you understand Sharia law. For example, and I know some people are not going to be happy with what I'm about to say here, but in Christianity, there are some people who say they're Christian that we wouldn't think are Christian at all. And I'm not just talking about Mormons, but I'm talking about the Ku Klux Klan. They, you know, burn crosses. They think they're Christian. We of course, do not. But that is a radical group within the Christian pale that we would disagree with, that obey the Bible properly at all. And this is what's also happening within the Muslim faith. And that's what I was going to ask questions about. I'm giving some serious consideration, because they were so friendly, of just dropping by there and seeing if I can sit down with the imam and just ask him a lot of questions that I have, particularly how they differentiate themselves from the other folks. By the way, the food was really excellent. This is a friendly group, and if I didn't understand what they really believed and didn't have these sheets from a friend of mine who went through the Quran, I would really wonder about it. Now, there is a book that I want you to know about. It's Comparing the Quran and the Bible. It's by Rick Richter. And the reason I mentioned it is because it was written in 2011, published by Baker Books. No, my publishing company is Trillium Productions, but there is another company. But here's his, in his foreword, he has some people that he thanks. And one of them he has here is myself, host of Law and Gospel radio broadcast. And he quotes me, "It is rare that I would have a guest on my radio program more than twice. However, I have had Rick Richter on three times because his book is filled with interesting information that cannot be exhausted in an interview." And so this can be found, Comparing the Quran and the Bible, Amazon.com. I mean, it's 256 pages and compares a lot about what the Quran has to say in many areas with the Bible, and has an index of Bible verses, etc. Tomorrow we'll continue our conversation with Wes Reimnitz. God bless.
Weekday at this time on Worldwide KFUO. For a contribution to the program, make your check payable to Law and Gospel and mail it to Pastor Tom Baker, Post Office Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri 63132. You can call toll-free at 1-877-267-1962 or email Law and Gospel at lawandgospel101.com. Views and opinions expressed on Worldwide KFUO may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. If you'd like to comment on programs or topics heard on Worldwide KFUO, write us at KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can also leave a question or comment on our comment line at 314-996-1542. We are the messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.